Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Back Issue Spotlight. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host.
And I'm Bob Breitel. In this episode, we'll be discussing a wide variety of back issues that John and I have recently acquired or read, as well as a spotlight on a classic comic storyline.
Okay, in this back issue spotlight, we're going to actually cover something a little bit more recent, and that's going to be the Superman and the Legion of Superheroes storyline, since that seems to be coming into play with stories like the Legion of Three Worlds for Final Crisis. But before we get into that, as always, we'll go over what back issues we bought recently, and I'll go through my list real quick. Okay, I'm done. That's right, I haven't really gotten any lately.
Well, we recorded the last one only about a week ago, so you're forgiven.
Yeah, well, I'm heading to Austin Books for their Labor Day sale, so I may pick up a few things there. I don't know. I have enough to read as it is.
So. Yeah.
How about you? How many zillions of dollars have you done in back issues lately?
I don't know about zillions of dollars, but I have got Adventure Comics number 322 and 324, which have the Legion of Superheroes.
Cool.
Strangely enough, it ties into this a little bit. Batman 237, Detective 411, which now puts me with my detective string from 360 on up. And I still need that 359, which is the first Batgirl. And then that'll push me back a lot farther. Then I got Hulk number 104. I've only got one more issue of Hulk to go, and I'll have all of them from the restart at issue 102, I believe it was. I got Metal Men 17 and 25, original series, Superboy 123 and 124. I got issue 46 of Weird Western Tales, and Wonder Woman issues 184, 193, 195, and 199. This is a white jumpsuit Wonder Woman, or Diana Prince, actually, back then. Oh, and I got a recent back issue, Archaic, number 4, which finished off the ones that's from Phoenix. And I can actually go through and read that series now. I was kind of like looking for issue number 4, and I was going to read it all at once.
I always hate it when I'm missing, you know, one issue of a recent thing. Just, you know, can't read the whole thing until I get it. It's frustrating.
Yeah. And it's like a really small press book. I don't know how many they would have even printed of this thing. So I had it on my want list at mycomicshop.com for about the last 6 months. And it like popped up. They got one in stock. And then like, boom, I bought it.
Cool.
Which that want list is a really nice feature that they have there. So give them a plug for that.
Yeah, I really like that because I've got a couple of gaps I'm trying to fill in. So I've just put them on my want list and, you know. When they pop up and that coincides with the sales, what I'll start, you know, filling in some of these gaps.
Exactly. And I think that's how I got the Detective 411 also. That was like the only issue of Detective I needed in like this big wide gap. So I just threw it on my want list and, you know, it popped up. But we can talk about a couple of threads on the forum related to back issues. We do have, as always, a pinned thread about back issues, where we have online shopping experience where you can ask questions or also just go and look at it. And it's got hints about all different kinds of places that you can go to buy back issues. And that's a good resource, I think. Well, you know, I'll let everyone else decide for themselves, but it seems like that is a good one. And we also have a Lone Star MyComicShop.com Q&A thread that is stickied, which is useful for, again, if you've got a question about shopping for the back issues here.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good places to get some back issues at very affordable prices. And in a lot of cases, it winds up just being cheaper than new comics. So.
Yeah. I got an email from Just Bill the other day. He was like looking into getting some Ultraverse books, and he was asking me just, you know, hey, where do you think I should go? And I kind of did a quick look, and it turned out in his case, Torpedo Comics was the best source because Torpedo had most of the Ultraverse stuff in their monolith section for 99 cents a piece. And you can buy, you know, get free shipping when you spend $15 there. And, you know, I went to mycomicshop.com, and most of those same Ultraverse issues were about $1.50 a piece. And, of course, you got to spend $50 to get free shipping. So in that case, Torpedo was the way to go for what he wanted to get. But we've got all that on the online comic shopping experience thread. We've got kind of assessments of a whole bunch of different online places to buy back issues, and you can see the pros and cons to all the different ones if you're interested in that.
Yeah.
So beyond that, we have got the Superman and the Legion that ran through Action Comics, the great Jeff Johns, who right now is probably my favorite comics writer, and art by Gary Frank, who I'm really liking also, and he draws a real Christopher Reeve-looking Superman.
He does. He really does. It's
which I don't mind, but I loved this. I loved this book. I loved this series, and I loved it so much that I bought the issues, and then I bought the hardcover when it came out to put on my shelf so that I can easily pluck this off the shelf and reread this story time and again, because this was wonderful.
Well, that's where you had the advantage over me. I had to go hunt down these issues out of my recent back issue stuff, which I have not been sorting over the last year. I had to go through, I kid you not, like 3,000 comics, I think, to go find these six issues. And, I mean, I had like 10 short boxes, 5 or 6 drawer boxes to go through. It took forever.
Well, I had this, someone was going to trade me the Final Crisis #1, the strip down the middle cover for the Green Lantern cover. And I just don't know where the hell I have it, because it came out like 3 months ago. I'm going to have to dig through about 4 long boxes to find the thing. It's anything recent is hard. You know, something that's old, I at least know where it is, and it's in comic base. And, you know, but the recent stuff, I just don't have a good record of.
Yeah. Speaking of comic base, we may want to do a roundtable discussion in the near future on comic book database stuff.
Sure.
That'd be
a good one.
I may be in the market for one. I'm starting to have some issues with Excel. It is refusing to sort my list. It says it doesn't have enough resources. But that's another issue entirely.
You need a terabyte of RAM.
Just about. Jeez. So, Superman and the Legion. This was a great storyline. This is one that I really enjoyed. And am glad to see that Jeff Johns is doing stuff with this Legion. And it's the old school classic Legion, you know, kind of how it left off around Crisis on Infinite Earths. And I like how he started this storyline with kind of a parallel to, you know, Krypton's doom and shooting off, you know, Superman to Earth, and them shooting off, you know, a bunch of aliens who are also on a doomed planet shooting off their child to Earth, where it is met by June and Mara, who give it a very different welcome than Kal-El got when he reached Earth.
No kidding. Like, take out that big gun and blast the little poor child. Which actually parallels a scene directly in Legion of Three Worlds #1 when Superboy crashes down in their cornfield or whatever the heck. Is that corn?
I think it's actually the same couple that he hits.
Yeah, it is. I think it is. They come out with the same gun and it's like, oops.
So we get, you know, a bunch of, I mean, it's kind of old school storytelling and story elements to a degree, but in a modern twist. You know, we get some stuff with Brainiac, and then we get the Legion kind of reinserted into Superman's background, which prior to this had kind of been alluded to with the Lightning Saga over in JLA JSA. But this actually shows us how the New Earth Clark Kent, you know, met the Legion and how all that fit in. And, I mean, yeah. The Legion's been rebooted twice over its, what, 40-year history or 50? How long is...
Oh, well, I mean, they came out in the late 50s.
So, yeah, so, 50 years. Because they're just now hitting an anniversary, I think.
It's about, yeah, it's coming up. You know, it's coming up on 50 years. It's a long time. Now, I would say they've had a couple of hard reboots, but there's been some soft reboots in there, too.
Well, there's some definite changes of the status quo. The five-year later thing was one of those. But they've only had two where they kind of restarted from scratch and done some major twists and turns on the characters.
Right.
So to see Wildfire, to see Dawnstar, and a few of the characters that kind of got left behind was really nice to see in this storyline. Now, in the second issue, they did something else that was really cool, and that was basically unearthing the Batcave and seeing how that, you know, looks a thousand years down the line. It's obviously had seen better days, but, you know, it's funny because the Batcave and the Justice League Happy Harbor Cave seem to be some of the locations that everybody sooner or later makes it to.
Yeah, that's true. I love, you know, Gary Frank's art. It's getting to the point where, I mean, he's got a very distinct art style. I mean, I can look at it and say, okay, that's Gary Frank's art. What I do appreciate about his art is, like George Perez, and he's got a very different style than Perez, but what he does is he does the detail and the little Easter eggs and all the little details. You know, you can look at this two-page Batcave spread that he does and just – I mean, I can look at it for 10 minutes and just drink in all the little details that he's got in there. I love it.
Yeah, I like how he has the different Batmobiles hidden in one of the corners of the cave. And
some of that Bat armor, like you almost see that Bat armor suit from Kingdom Come.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's some things underneath, you know, sheets. And he's got a Bat plane, like the Bat wing. Almost from the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little different, but it's similar. You got like the little tubes with all the costumes in them, and if you look carefully enough, you can kind of make out what a lot of those are. And you got the giant penny and the Joker card, and you know, all the classic things. It's just really nice.
Yeah, what I like is like where you've got the giant dinosaur, even got lights rigged up for it, you know, to properly display it. It's like, okay, that's something that a lot of artists would just wouldn't bother with. But shows that extra level of detail and thought that I like.
Now, one thing is, like, I love his art, but, you know, one thing is there's a certain realism to it, but he does draw, like, Saturn Girl. I mean, she looks, like, drawn. You know what I mean? She's got kind of, like, the sunken cheeks. She's got kind of a haunted look about her almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know the best way to describe it, but it is a very distinctive style.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I would describe it either. But he doesn't skimp on the detail. You know, there are a couple of places where you see Lightning Lad, and you get enough of his Legion tattoo on his left arm to know that it's there. You know, whereas a lot of other, again, a lot of artists these days, you know, they're not going to worry about that level of detail sometimes. But for me, having that extra detail in the background and stuff makes the story seem that much more real, because there's that much more, you know, subtle background and stuff to ground the story.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it just carries through all the issues. It's the, you know, one thing that I'll say is when you have the two-page spreads, they're, and this is partially, I'm sure, Geoff Johns writing and partially Gary Frank, but I mean, they're used to nice effect. I like when they do the two-page spreads because they're popping some particular story element that you really want to stress, and they just are crammed with everything that you'd want to have in that. And the same thing when they do a full page. You know, it's hitting a beat in the story.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very nicely done when they do it that way.
Well, and when they use the full page, you know, things, you know, they allow us to kind of pause and see some stuff that, you know, if it was in a smaller panel with other stuff on the page, wouldn't get appreciated as well. Like near the end of the second issue where we see, you know, some of the Legionnaires who've been trapped in the stasis pods or whatever, with Invisible Kid, Phantom Girl, Ultra Boy, Shrinking Violet, and Block. mean, that's something they could have easily done, you know, just in a panel on the page versus it being its own page. But by doing it, it really kind of, again, you know, brings that to the forefront and lets us, you know, say, oh, wait, this is important.
Another thing I really like, you know, that they're bringing back, you know, that's very classic Legion, but the little, whenever they kind of introduce a Legionnaire, they have the little bubble with the line over to the person, you know, Shadowlass, Tasmia Malor, Homeworld, Talak 8, you know, abilities, generates absolute darkness, you know, and it's just like, they always used to do that in Legion, and I love that, and it just, it's like a little shorthand, and it's like telling you this is who it is, and this is what their powers are, and here's where they're from, and it's like, I as a Legion fan, it's like, whenever you're like, Ultra Boy, you know, Joe Na of Rimbor, you know, it just like is burned into my brain because they always would beat us over the head with it. And in a good way, you know, they would reinforce, I won't say beat over the head, that's bad. They would reinforce this information with us to the point that it becomes a good common knowledge for you as a fan. And I like that.
Well, particularly with a group like the Legion, which is a large group and frequently had 20 to 30 or more members at any one time, you needed to have that roll call. You needed to have the, okay, remember who this character is, because it may have been a few months since we've seen them. And particularly in this storyline, where it had been, what, 20 years, maybe a little more, since we've seen this Legion? And we haven't really seen this Legion, aside from the Lightning Saga storyline in JLA JSA, since before the 5-year later jump. Because after 5-year later, these characters look different and were different.
Now, this is my Legion. You know, when I started reading Legion, this was, you know, this was it for me. And I've since, you know, I've read back to the early Legion, but, you know, the Dawnstar, Wildfire, and I read when it got a little farther on, you know, with the one that had Quizlet and Tellus and mm-hmm. Block and all that. But I started Legion with this Legion right here. So this is really hitting me, you know, favorably.
Well, this was around the time I was reading and getting hooked on Legion, which was one of the earlier titles I got on. And Block had been introduced. He was one of the Legion of supervillains at that point and later became a member of the team. But I got on around the Reflecto storyline. And, you know, this group of Legionnaires is that one a few years later. So there are a couple of costume changes, a couple of things where, again, having the, oh yeah, that's who this character is really handy. So, but it's nice to see this group of Legionnaires kind of getting the respect it deserves. And again, you've had some great characters like Dawnstar that didn't make it to either of the reboots. So seeing that character back is just fun.
I really like Dawnstar. It's just, I don't know why, you know, kind of big wings and
it's a
tracking capabilities.
It's a simple character, but it was a fun, entertaining one. And really, how many essentially Native American, you know, Indian type superheroes are there? You know, and mm-hmm. I don't think she was Earth based, although.
Well, she was from an Earth colony.
Yeah.
But she was human. She wasn't like from, you know, someplace else.
Right, right. Starhaven Earth Colony, yeah.
Right.
So just in terms of the diversity she brought to the Legion, I thought was cool. And it's a good visual, you know? So.
Do you want to just give a recap of the story here? I mean, we'll have spoilers in this. Back issue spotlight, we spoil the hell out of them. So let's kind of give a rundown of what the basic plot and story is of this.
Okay, as we already mentioned, an alien race, their world is dying. They shoot off this kid to Earth because he's going to be the next Superman. Unfortunately, he meets up with the wrong type of people. They're a bit xenophobic, and they kill him.
No Jonathan and Martha Kent, these two.
No. You know, if you've got the choice of Jonathan and Martha and June and Mara, go with Jonathan and Martha. You'll live longer.
I think what they're really doing there is they're establishing the fact that in this story continuity, the Earth at this point has become really, really xenophobic. And it's like, you know, Earth for humans, and they're just really anti any alien.
Yeah, very
and
much
that,
so.
That's kind of like the setup, you know, with the Legion that, you know, the Earth-based Legion with Earthman.
Mm-hmm. We get some scenes with Superman as Clark Kent at the Daily Planet and how, let's see, he basically has to bolt out of there to go fight Brainiac. Get a really nice scene with him jumping out the window and changing into Superman, which I thought was kind of cool. And we find out that this Brainiac is not the Brainiac, but sent from Brainiac 5, who triggers Superman's memory to where he remembers having met the Legion as a young Clark Kent. And I can't tell if Clark was in high school or college at the time. Looks like he was in high school because he's going back to the farm.
Yeah, yeah. It looks to be the case.
So we get the retelling of him meeting the original Legionnaires of Lightning Lad, Cosmic Boy, and Saturn Girl, and getting his flight ring, which in and of itself is a little bit of a retcon just in terms of it being a flight ring at that point. Because were they doing flight rings by that point, or were they still at the flight belts?
I am not completely sure. It's a really good question.
It doesn't matter either way, but I was thinking flight belts. But, you know, they then get the time sphere out, which they've hidden, and said, hey, you want to come visit the future? So he does, and we get this beautiful double-page splash of the early Legion. And this is the period kind of before I got in, but not by a whole lot. You know, we see Phantom Girl and Timberwolf in their original costumes, Starboy in his original costume, or early costume and stuff. So that's nice. And then we go back to Superman again, you know, coming out of the memory sequence that Brainiac 5 had put him in, and then remembering that he hadn't seen the Legion since the first crisis up until the Lightning Saga. In the JLA JSA stuff, where we see Starman, Dream Girl, Dawnstar, who are the other ones that came back? Duo Damsel.
Wildfire, right?
Wildfire, yeah. That was another good
Colossal Boy, looks like, yeah.
Yeah, that was another good storyline that's worth checking out. So hidden inside this huge Brainiac figure is another time sphere. That when Superman puts on his ring is going to take him up to the future, which it does, and it's kind of it looks like a bumpy ride. He comes out a little shaken, only to find that he's in kind of the, you know, dystopic future, which isn't quite as bright and uplifting as he remembered it being, and the science police are about to, you know, say, hey, you can't be there, and shoot him. He gets a quick rescue by Colossal Boy, who apparently, I guess, had just picked up a bunch of flight rings, and he's a little surprised to see Superman. Dawnstar and Wildfire get back into the mix and into the story, and let's see, at that point, the Time Sphere gets shot by the science police. Superman says, hey, you know, I am Superman, because some of the guys are doubting him. I'll take care of this, and he gets shot, because that's when he finds out that at this point in the future, Earth's sun is red, and that closes out the first issue. Kind of a lousy way to find out, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like, hey, I'm Superman.
Yeah, block the blast, get shot through the hand. It's like, ouch. So that takes us into the second issue, and we start with the original three Legionnaires of Cosmic Boy, Saturn Girl, and Lightning Lad spelunking into the Batcave. And again, we get that two-page spread that we talked about a few minutes ago.
I will point out that, you know, if you get the hardcover, which if you don't go back, each chapter they have the normal Gary Frank cover, and then they also reproduce the variant Andy Kubert cover for the issue as well as kind of like the inter-chapter, you know, break in the hardcover. And The Lightning Lad, Cosmic Boy, and Saturn Girl spelunking, you know, down on little ropes or lines into the Batcave is the Andy Kubert cover for the second part.
And of course, they're at the Batcave looking for proof that Krypton existed, because the reason Earth is so xenophobic is the population has been convinced that Superman wasn't an alien. He was a human fighting against aliens. So they're looking for the kryptonite ring that Batman had. And before they can find it, they get introduced to... What is Earthman's group called? Not seeing it listed here, actually. But we see, you know, Earthman and his team, which comprise of Spider-Girl, Tusker, Golden Boy, Storm Boy, and Radiation Roy. And at least Spider-Girl and Radiation Roy were members of the Legion of Supervillains at one point. I don't remember Tusker or Golden Boy or Storm Boy.
Storm Boy, yeah.
Earthman, I believe, was Nemesis Kid, but I could be wrong on that, because, again, it's been a while since I've read some of those early Legion stories. So we get a pretty good fight scene in the Batcave, including, you know, Cosmic Boy using his magnetic powers to hurl a whole bunch of batarangs at people and stuff. And, of course, there's quite a bit of property damage, but, you know, Batman being dead for, you know, 1,000 years probably doesn't mind too much. But the Legionnaires wind up losing, and Earthman's group, which here's his the name of it, it's the Justice League. They win the day and capture those three Legionnaires. We then cut over to what's going on with Superman. He, Dawnstar, Wildfire, and Colossal Boy are over at the former Brawl Embassy. Of course, you know, embassies for other worlds kind of getting shut down in this xenophobic age. And they're finding, I believe, a couple of more flight rings and filling Superman in on what happened and how the Earth became so xenophobic. Let's see. They're after the rings because apparently all the Legionnaires have, I guess, lost theirs, and they're, you know, kind of arming back up and reforming the Legion. We then cut to the Human Cultural Center, which is a space station in the headquarters of the Justice League of Earth, where there's a history class going on for a bunch of elementary school or high schoolers or whatever, talking about the re-envisioned past and how, you know, there's this whole talk of Superman having come from Krypton and how... Let's see, how did this go? How that was, you know, commonly believed to be true up until... Absorbency Boy, who became Earthman, found the proof that Superman was not an alien, but despised aliens, and again is using that as propaganda to turn Earth into this xenophobic place.
Yeah, and you know, so there we go. Absorbency Boy. I don't remember Absorbency Boy as like at best a member of a throwaway guy who tried to be in the Legion and got tossed down into the subs or something. Like something good happened to give him these powers.
He wouldn't have been admitted to the Legion because his powers are based on absorbing other people's powers. And they had a rule at that point of, you know, you had to have your own powers. So secondhand stuff wouldn't have cut it back then.
Yeah.
So right outside the huge windows of this classroom walks the Justice League of Earth with their new captives of Lightning Lad, Saturn Girl, and Cosmic Boy. Which, you know, Absorbency Boy, Earthman, you know, conveniently absorbs all their powers. Which is the whole reason he's putting them in these stasis tubes. And what's really funny is the stasis tubes, the shape of them match the Superman shield. So they're here, pentagon type, or irregular pentagon figure shaped cases. It's kind of cool. And this is when we find out he has these other Legionnaires, Invisible Kid, Phantom Girl, Ultra Boy, Shrinking Violet, and Block. Now you gotta figure, if this guy is absorbing all their powers, he's just getting more and more powerful and harder to take out. We then cut back to Earth, where Superman is being led to where a lot of the other Legionnaires are being held. And that's Alien Holding Camp 6736, which looks an awful lot like the old Legion of Superheroes headquarters with the rocket ship face down in the ground.
Yeah.
Great visual there.
I don't know. It seems not – because the Legion rocket was always kind of like the shiny kind of chrome looking rocket, and this one, you know, looks more like a building with like the windows and, you know.
This is much more industrial and less.
That's the word I was looking for. Industrial, exactly.
And much bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, they clearly established the scale here as this is a skyscraper kind of a thing. It's at least 30, 40 stories tall, minimum. So that takes us out of the second issue. Second issue.
Yeah.
Going into the third, we pick up with the Justice League of Earth, and they are... Where are they? They're in Metropolis at the former headquarters of the Legion of Superheroes. So, of course, they do what any good Justice League team would do and start attacking statues just because they're mad and upset. It's like, very heroic. We then cut to inside the alien holding camp we've seen before as we see one of these people getting tortured. And clearly a Legionnaire, because he's sitting there not telling them what they want to hear, but hey, long live the Legion. Doesn't go over very well with the torturer. Meanwhile, the alien holding camp gets attacked by Colossal Boy, Superman, Wildfire, and Dawnstar. And they actually break out a lot of people, including others that just happen to be there. I mean, they're not limiting it to just the Legionnaires. Superman goes to fight some of the guards and gets that reminder, oh wait, Red Sun, not as powerful. He still does okay, but this kind of plays into the Superman, you know, he's not supposed to be bleeding because he's superpowered. So they go rescue the guy who had been getting tortured, but as they're about to get in there, power had been cut off and he breaks free, and we find out it's the one and only Polar Boy. And he was originally one of the Legion of Subs, but actually not only got into the team itself, but I believe was the leader of the team for a while.
Yes. Substitute made good.
Yeah. And really, they amped up his power here, because before he could control cold and stuff like that. Here, he's almost Iceman-ish and is able to create an arm of ice to put his ring on, having lost that in the torture. So they also meet up with two of the other Legionnaires, and that's Shadowlass and Nightgirl, which is a really good combination, because Shadowlass generates darkness and Nightgirl only has superhuman strength in darkness. So logical team up there. And Nightgirl is one of the other ones that used to be one of the subs.
Yeah.
So, of course, we get the usual, hey, let's hand out the ring so everybody's got one. Because not only do they provide the flight, but also some communication capabilities. And they go to the new underground headquarters for the Legion clubhouse. We see the Legion flag. We see Superman's flag flying. And it looks like in the background we've got like Stargate-type transmatter warp gates or whatever they are for this continuity.
It almost looks like, you know, this is one of these things where in the future the city has been built on top of the old city.
Yeah.
Or something, because this looks like a city street. You know, you see like some, you know, lamp posts there and, you know, look like buildings. It doesn't look like a typical, you know, subterranean, you know, tunnels and cave complex. This looks like the city has, you know, just been built on top of old.
Oh, yeah.
I'm assuming this is still Metropolis.
Well, this is Hero Square in Metropolis, which clearly, like you said, had been built over. And there's still stairs going down to the old metro rail system. So,
oh, you're right.
You know, it's kind of the what was the big, you know, square for town is now, you know, buried underground as a railway station kind of thing. And they've got, stargates, opening wormholes to get people traveling and stuff. We meet up with a few more Legionnaires. This time it's Lightning Lass and Timberwolf. It's good to see those back in play. And then before they can go and gather more Legionnaires and stuff, the Justice League attacks yet again. And this time, Timberwolf and Dawnstar stop Superman from, you know, attacking and realize, you know, they've got to go after the core of the plan. And they take one of the shuttle pods or whatever and go through the warp gate, winding up on Kalu, which is Brainiac 5's home world. And really, I think the only one who made it through might have been Superman. I don't think anyone else made it in there.
And you bring up an interesting digression that I'm going to now make, and that is pronunciation of things in comics. I've always in my mind pronounced it as Kolu with a long O, and you just called it Kalu with a short O. I don't know what's the right one, but it's just very interesting, you know, because you read something for, you know, all this time and you don't really hear it spoken. And, you know, it's just like a certain way that in your head, you know, you always do it. It goes, you know, one of the classic ones is Submariner, Submariner.
Yeah.
You know? It's like,
hey, I'll freely cop to the fact that I probably mispronounce stuff left, right, and center.
No, I'm just curious now because, you know, Kalu or Kolu are both equally valid pronunciations of that, it would seem. So I don't know which one is which.
How did they pronounce it on the Legion cartoon?
I don't remember. So that'd be a good one to check.
I do wish that they would have pronunciation guides on some of these things. But we finally see Brainiac 5 at the end of that issue. That brings us to the next issue, where we start on a couple of different scenes on Brawl, Titan, and Wyneth. Brawl, of course, home of Cosmic Boy. Titan, home of Lightning Lad and Lightning Lass. And Wyneth, which is Saturn Girl's homeworld, correct?
No.
I've got those backwards.
Wyneth
Titan is Saturn Girl. Wyneth is Lightning Lad and Lightning Lass.
Yeah.
Oh, so close. Right. And then we go back to Brainy's homeworld, and I stand corrected. Wildfire, Dawnstar, Colossal Boy, and Polar Boy did make it there with him. Although, really, I didn't see that at the end of the last issue. I guess we see them in the background there. We see Dawnstar and Colossal Boy.
In the next page from that two-page spread where they're in that whatever kind of those things are that are holding them captive, the Brainiac 5 mm-hmm. sequence there, I mean, it's just another example of Gary Frank, you know, the facial expressions. I mean, people always say like and not taking anything away from Kevin Maguire, but, you know, Kevin Maguire is known for like the really good, you know, facial expressions. I mean, this is like – I mean, I love the way – Gary Frank captures the expressions on people's face. I mean, they're really conveying a crucial story element, you know, just how he does it, you know.
Well, and that
very nicely done.
That sequence of panels there is conceptually straight out of Happy Days, where the Fonz couldn't admit he was wrong and neither can Brainiac 5. I thought that was kind of cool. So Brainiac 5 orders his robot minions away, and then, because he's basically saying, you know, hey, you guys are kind of doomed, nobody can, you know, do this, I'm the leader of the evil movement going on. Robots go away, and he's like, hey, what took you guys so long? I've been doing what I can to hold out here. So he immediately releases the guys and, you know, tells them that the only way he could really deal with the problem was to kind of take over as his planet's dictator, which again is something that kind of plays in on the Legion of Three Worlds, having at that point no longer had that position. And we see the lightning rod thing that we had in the Lightning Saga stuff that Brainy has, and we cut back over to the headquarters of the Justice League, and they now have a couple of more Legionnaires captured, Lightning Lass and Shadow Girl, Shadow Lass. And we learned something interesting about the teacher of that classroom we'd seen last issue, and that it's Eiffel Ethel, which was...
Oh, yeah. She was...
another reject, another Legion reject, of which there are many. So that was a nice little touch.
But didn't she also like kind of become kind of like a receptionist or something like that?
She might have been one of the subs.
Well, I think she was a sub, but I thought she also even got like kind of a administrative position for the Legion at one point.
I don't recall that. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but not ringing any bells for me. So we get to learn a little bit more about some of these Justice Leaguers. We also find out that there is a plant that's not really a plant. That'll come into play a little later. And then we get this one nutcase who's going under more surgery to get more powers. And this guy is... Who is this guy? I'm not seeing a name on this. Anyways, it just further shows that some of these guys are just woefully disturbed. Actually, this is Storm Boy with the ability to manipulate weather, which apparently not so native. It's one that is apparently mechanically induced or, you know, surgically gifted powers. And then we see a nice little touching scene with Spider-Girl and Radiation Roy, and we find out that the radiation has really not been so kind to Roy.
And you know why he wears that full helmet.
Yeah, why it's such a big full helmet. Jeez. And then we see Earthman once again using his Absorbency Boy powers and sucking in the powers of all the Legionnaires he's got captured at this point, which is quite a few. So he's becoming a one-man Legion, getting a bit full of himself, and one of the students... Actually, no, I take it back. It's not one of the students. It's the plant we saw before has now impersonated some machinery and is now impersonating a student walking around and finds out what happened to Sun Boy. Sun Boy has been captured. He's in this huge machinery, and they are using it to change the wavelength of the sun from yellow to red. This is when Earthman discovers that what's appearing to be a little girl at this point is really Chameleon Girl, which is the wife of Colossal Boy. And we cut to Colossal Boy having just been told by Brainiac 5 where Chameleon Girl is. And, of course, Colossal Boy not too happy with that. We get that group of Legionnaires basically saying, you know, hey, we need to go save the galaxy once again. Colossal Boy gives Branny a ring because, of course, that's one of the key visuals for the whole thing. And they head on a rocket ship back for Earth, I believe. So, and this is where we're finding out that the universe is missing a key figure to activate Branny's lightning rod. And we get mention of the crisis of the 31st century. Which makes me think if that key figure is Superboy Prime, and this is playing into the Legion of Three Worlds. So they wind up in a big fight with the robot drones, and again, like I said, head off into that spaceship trying to stop intergalactic war. That brings us to the fifth part. We get some nice opening parallels between a young Clark Kent trying to fit in and some of the subs trying to fit in, particularly Polar Boy. Some very cool visual mirroring there. And this is where Superman's saying, you know, hey, we need more help, let's call in the subs. Wildfire just kind of puts the, hey, do we really want to do that? That's when, you know, we get reminded that, hey, Polar Boy used to be one of them, and he was a sub that made good. So Brainiac 5 says, yeah, I can contact them. They've always been kind of a contingency. And we cut back to the Justice League headquarters of Earth, where Earthman was knocking around Chameleon Girl. And, of course, he's doing it with lightning powers and pretty much everything in his arsenal, which at that point, pretty big. And what I hadn't really noticed before is he's got a ring, which I assume is a Justice League ring, kind of mirroring the Legion ring. They fight for a couple of pages. He seems to snap her neck. Keep in mind, she's a shapeshifter. That may not be that big of a problem. We cut to Eiffel, Ethel, and Tusker. They're talking about some stuff and realize that they're about to get rammed by what looks like a space cab, and or at least a space shuttle of some sort. That just plows through a number of levels and ends up with Stone Boy knocking into Radiation Roy. Stone Boy, of course, having the powers of turning to stone. Downside, can't move when he does it.
That's funny.
And, of course, he'd struck a very, you know, imposing pose of sorts, I suppose.
I guess he considers that imposing, but...
That's at least a striking pose. And he struck somebody, so... And, of course, you know, Spider-Girl's like, they sent in the subs? And we get introduced to Rainbow Girl, Fire Lad, Chlorophyll Kid, and, of course, the statuesque Stone Boy. Now, Rainbow Girl used to be Color Kid, but actually changed genders, I think, at one point. And I think that might have even been an Ambush Bug storyline. So we get a fight scene between all these guys, and really, the subs are a bit outmatched. But it makes for a fun couple of pages. And the subs start to be winning, but, you know, hey, it's the subs. Give it time. While that's going on, Brainiac 5, Dawnstar, Colossal Boy, Wildfire, Polar Boy, and Superman have snuck in and found the stasis chambers. And this is when we find out that Earthman needs to recharge his powers from these guys every 12 hours. So Brainiac is also checking the crystal tablet that Earthman claims to have uncovered in the Arctic that made everyone think Superman wasn't from Krypton. So there's the question of where did that come from? And, of course, they're starting to wonder, you know, how did they turn the sun red and all that? And that's when they come in and find Sunboy. And then as they're looking at that, and Brainiac 5's trying to get him out of that machinery without, you know, turning the sun into a supernova or other bad things like that, that's when Chameleon Girl stumbles in, not feeling too well. Only for Superman to realize there's a little stasis chamber in the background that has the real one, and that Earthman has used her shape-shifting abilities to infiltrate, and we get a fairly nice fight scene there with Earthman, who's got all of these powers, going up against Superman that has none. Meanwhile, we cut back to the subs fighting. I mean, there's a lot of action going on here. And some really good stuff with Superman, you know, showing it's the man, not the powers, that make him a hero. Ending with Superman, you know, saying, hey, let's take this outside, and using his flight ring to push Earthman outside of the space station they're on. That ends the fifth part. Bringing us to the fantastic finale. Now, of course, Superman out in space now against Earthman. Earthman with all these powers, but getting at least a little further out of range where he can't charge up on other people, presumably. Going up against a powerless Superman who he's about to, you know, plow through reentry and kill. Colossal Boy gets his wife out of the stasis tube. Brainiac 5 shuts down the machinery that's been transforming the sun from yellow to red. They get Sunboy out of that, and Earthman is going on about his obsession of how all he wanted was that Legion flight ring, so he's going to be taking Superman's. They manage to wake up Sunboy, which I thought was a really kind of a nice twist. You know, it's like, how are we going to wake him up? How are we going to wake him up? And Brainiac 5 is, we need you to kiss him, Chameleon Girl. She's like, what? This isn't a fairy tale. It's like, yeah, this is Sunboy. He's always been a womanizer. What faster way can you get his attention? Oh, and oh, by the way, he likes brunettes. Really great scene. So she shapeshifts, kisses him. He wakes up. Suddenly he realizes, hey, it's too hot. The whole bit with the sun's off. And instantly, you know, it reverts to its natural yellow state. Superman's about to crash down to Earth and die. But oh, wait, it's a yellow sun. He comes to a stop just, you know, feet above the surface. And we get the whole, hey, it's Superman. And it's like, hey, Superman's not going to help aliens. Again, he blocks a blast from one of the science police guns. This time, of course, it doesn't hurt him and just burns off the bandage from the last time he'd gotten shot through the hand. And he's like, hey, I'm for everybody. None of this xenophobic stuff. And kind of chastises the officers for that. Meanwhile, Earthman lands. We get another fight, but this time both of them have powers. And he uses, Earthman uses all the stuff, you know, from the phasing, from Phantom Girl, Lightning Lad's electricity, the strength he's gotten from a couple of people. And, you know, it comes down to a great, great splash page of Earthman wondering, well, what do you got? Superman saying, well, I got the real deal, with the Legion behind him in kind of that classic they're all flying pose. And we get this really great fight scene ending with Superman just knocking Earthman out in a single punch. This pretty much helps stop the intergalactic war that was about to start. We cut to a day later, get again a classic shot, full page, of the Legionnaires all flying, which again, one of the hallmarks of the series. And then we get kind of the wrap-up on, hey, it's not all over, we still got some cleanup, but, you know, hopefully we can get rid of the xenophobia that's going around. And they return Superman to his time, but they're going to let him remember this time. And then we
get... I think Yeah, I just wanted, the one thing that I like here is, and they had one of these back in the early part, but they kind of have a flashback scene to when Superboy first got brought into the future by Cosmic Boy, Lightning Lad, and Saturn Girl. And, you know, they burn that L into the tree and they just remind you about that. And then, you know, it ends with him going back to Smallville and seeing that L, a little more grown over and everything, because it's been, you know, however many, 20 years, 25 years, but, or maybe not as many. He's supposed to be, what, like 30, 35, so maybe 20 years.
Yeah. But basically, he goes back to where he had gone back before, the same physical location from that first time to this time. Kind of a nice touchstone scene there. And then I doubt you have it in the trade there, or the hardcover, I mean. But then after the end of the story, we get a nice full-page ad of, you know, Superman and the Legion versus Superman Prime and the Legion of Supervillains, which is now Superboy Prime. It's like, come on, be consistent, guys. But I thought that was just a really cool visual. And then the full-page ad after that where we see, you know, all the Legionnaires and stuff fighting. Although, really, in that page, all the Legionnaires I'm seeing are from the... No, I take it back. We see XS. We see some of the ones from the other continuities. But it was this ad that really got me kind of jazzed about the Superman, or the Final Crisis Legion of Three Worlds storyline. I mean, they've had a long, really good history with the Legion a couple of times. And it's good to see them trying to kind of pull this back into the mainstream continuity, because it had been really disconnected for a long time.
Yeah, so we don't get the full-page ad, but they do add a couple of pages of concept sketches that Gary Frank did working on the costumes of the various Legionnaires. They're kind of like color-painted little sketches. They've got Timberwolf, Radiation Roy, Night Girl, Phantom Girl, Shadow Lass, Lightning Lad, Brainiac, Spider Girl, Tusker, Lightning Lass, Saturn Girl, Chameleon Girl, and Polar Boy. It's a nice little addition. I would like to hear from our listeners on if they like getting some more recent. This was a suggestion from a listener to do something more recent, and let us know if you like it. You know, we'll do more more recent back issues. If this is something that people are fond of, or if you like us to do the older stuff.
Well, and the other question I have, and we've brought this up on the forum thread for the back issue spotlight stuff, but I'd like to hear from a lot more listeners on this. There are a couple of things that I think might be fun to do for a back issue spotlight that have not been collected in trade or hardcover, specifically things like the original Dial H for Hero. Is this something you guys would be interested in hearing about, or because it's not collected and therefore you couldn't easily go pick it up, is it not something you want us to do on a back issue spotlight?
Yeah, that's the change, because what we've tried to do in the past on the back issue spotlight is, even on the older stuff, though it could be something that's 30 years old, we've tried to go out of our way to pick things that there's at least a modern reprint of, whether it's a short, a soft cover, or maybe a Marvel Masterworks or a showcase or something that you can go and not have to spend the money on. You know, if you wanted to read it, there's an option for you other than going and buying the original back issues. But that doesn't leave us open to everything, because as John pointed out, one thing that has been requested is a lot of the original Robbie Reed Dial H for Hero stuff, and I'm not aware of that currently being collected anywhere in any kind of a trade format. So if we did that, we could talk about it, but it would not be easy to go back and get a hold of and read those stories.
Right. I'm virtually certain it has not been collected, because I wound up getting those old issues of House of Mystery. And if there'd been a trade that I could have picked up, I would have. So let us know what you guys think on that, if that's a deciding factor or influencing factor on what you guys think we should do. And certainly suggest some other stuff. We'll try to be doing these a bit more frequently. It just comes down to needing the time to read through the back issues, which is less of an issue the more recent they are.
Right. I didn't reread. I didn't sit down and reread the Legion one because I just read it a couple of months ago. So it was still relatively fresh in my mind, although, you know, we forgot a couple of little plot points here and there. Hopefully that didn't bug people too much, but we picked them up as we went along.
Yeah, I did not have time to reread it. I was doing good to find them. But certainly when we've done most of the others, you know, the Batman one that we did with Brian Christman, when we did the Nick Fury one, you know, and even the Doom Quest one, you know, with the Iron Man stuff, that stuff I had to go through and read.
Yeah, and I did the same. I mean, so we had those kind of like freshly reread in our minds within, you know, a few days of recording the episode. Whereas, you know, this story we had, you know, it's been 6, 7, 8 months since I read the first parts of it. But still pretty recent, and it is nice that you can go out and pick up a trade of this, and highly recommend it. Like I said, this is some of the best Superman and, you know, the Legion. You know, this is a fabulous story. This storyline gets a double thumbs up from me.
Yeah.
Some of the best stuff out there.
Well, and I also echo your recommendation earlier about the Secrets of the Legion miniseries that went 3 issues. And if you're a really big Legion fan and don't have the Who's Who in the Legion and can find those back issues, that's kind of cool too.
Yeah.
Anything else? Or does that pretty much wrap it up?
I think that'll do it.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.